everybody. I'm Murray Sinclair. I'm the chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada. I want to talk to you for a few minutes about the issue of reconciliation, something which, of course, is very important to us here at the Commission, but also is of interest and importance to a lot of people in Canada. One of the things that we at the Commission have discovered is that it took us a long time to get to this point in terms of the relationship between Aboriginal people in this country. Seven generations of children went through the residential schools, and each of those children who were educated were told that their lives were not as good as the lives of the non-Aboriginal people of this country. They were told that their languages, their cultures were irrelevant. They were told that their people and their ancestors were heathens and pagans and uncivilized and needed to give up that way of life to come to a different way of living. At the same time that that was going on, non-Aboriginal children in the non-Aboriginal school systems of this country were also being told the same thing about Aboriginal people. So as a result, many generations of children, including you and your parents, have been raised to think about things in a different way, in the wrong way, in a way that is negative when it comes to Aboriginal people. And we need to change that. It was the educational system that has contributed to this problem in this country. And it's the educational system we believe that's going to help us to get away from this. We need to look at the way that we educate children. We need to look at the way that we educate ourselves. We need to look at what it is that our textbooks say about Aboriginal people. We need to look at what it is that Aboriginal people themselves are allowed to say within the educational system about their own histories. In addition to that, we also believe that what's important when it comes to looking at the way that children are educated is to understand that because it took us so many generations to get to this point, it's going to take us at least a few generations to be able to say that we are making progress. We cannot look for quick and easy solutions because there are none. We need to be able to look at this from the perspective of where do we want to be in 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 generations from now, when we talk about the relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in this country. And if we can agree on what that relationship needs to look like in the future, then what we need to think about is what can we do today that will contribute to that objective. Reconciliation will be about ensuring that everything that we do today is aimed at that high standard of restoring that balance to that relationship.
And so today we continue the exploration of our theme for February, the theme of reconciliation. We are doing this in the context of the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and so I introduced this sermon this morning with this video presentation from Justice Murray Sinclair, Chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But today I want to explore that topic, reconciliation, through the lens of our faith systems. I chose that particular video because it says something about the faith systems of First Nations peoples. Justice Sinclair acknowledged that 7 generations of children had their faith systems shaped in the residential school system, and that it would take 7 generations to restore the balance. The faith systems of First Nations people in Canada takes a long view, a view that many of us ignore in our more quick-fix culture. On the question of the role of faith systems in reconciliation, we can certainly see how the Christian faith system was abused to create the evils of the residential school system. As Unitarian Universalists, this is our heritage as well. Subjugations of Aboriginal people around the world was justified by Christian doctrine. A doctrine known as the Doctrine of Discovery. That doctrine held that Christian monarchs had the right to subjugate non-Christian peoples and to claim their lands in the name of that Christian monarch. Some theologians at the time no doubt thought that this could be justified, could be a justifiable interpretation of the message of Jesus of Nazareth. But clearly the doctrine prevailed because it provided justification for actions that were really motivated by insatiable human greed. Upon so-called discovery of a territory, the doctrine held that Indigenous peoples, by virtue of the fact that they were not Christians, could not claim ownership of their land. but only rights to occupation and to use. So in this way, colonial powers claimed the land for themselves and made these now landless people subjects in their empire. The doctrine of discovery, originally a matter of religious faith, passed into common law and is entrenched today in legal and legislative issues in Canada related to Aboriginal land titles. That doctrine of discovery has been repudiated by the Catholic Church. It's better late than never. In 1992, in Santo Domingo, on the 500th anniversary of Christopher Columbus's landing there, Pope John Paul II confessed and begged forgiveness for the sins of the Church in the Spanish conquest of America. He repeated a similar confession in March 12th of 2000, when kneeling at the holy doors of the Great Jubilee, he begged forgiveness for Catholics who had violated the rights and ethnic groups and peoples, and for showing contempt for their cultures and religious traditions. So this then is probably the worst example of a faith system leading to gross injustices for which we are now seeking reconciliation. For the remainder of the sermon today, I'd rather focus on how faith systems can be part of a solution to the problem of reconciliation. In particular, the Unitarian Universalist faith system. I stumbled on the artwork that appears on the cover of the Order of Service this morning, and I hesitated to use it, because I anticipated there would be some people wanting definitions. It reads, "Where there is hope, there is faith, and where there is faith, miracles can happen." At first glance, that may seem inappropriate for a Unitarian Universalist service. We still struggle with words like faith and miracles. Well, I personally think that struggle is good for us. A convincing case can be made that all faith systems begin with hope. The hope that the universe is comprehensible, that it's consistent, and that it can be a place that gives meaning to our lives. Without such hope, life is truly chaotic and meaningless. We take that hope and use it to give our lives meaning and structure. We develop systems of faith. Faith in the way the world works. Faith that guides our action in the world. You will know, perhaps by now, that how I feel about the importance of giving meaning to our lives. It's central to my religious beliefs. Faith is a universal human condition, and our faith and the meaning that we give to our lives are inextricably related. But faith is bigger than what we normally think of as religious faith. As I say, it's a universal human condition. We all have faith in something. Faith is the conscious or the unconscious understanding of the way the world works and our place in it. Faith develops and changes over our lifetimes. It's an ongoing process of giving ultimate meaning to our lives. We are the ones, each of us individually, who determines what our lives will mean to us. And it isn't always pretty, and it isn't always noble. I'm reminded of the t-shirt that reads, "The one who dies with the most stuff wins." That's one faith system. Faith in this definition of the term, though, is a human universal. Even the nihilist who claims to believe in nothing is expressing a powerful personal faith. Some might argue that we haven't figured out how the world works yet, or they haven't figured out their place in it, or at least they couldn't clearly articulate what that means, and therefore they consider themselves to be exempt from the need to define their faith. To them, I say, remember that the definition of faith is the conscious or unconscious understanding of the way the world works. So even if you're not aware of it, you have a faith. And furthermore, that it's your faith that guides your path and your actions in life. Matthew 7:16 in the Christian Bible reads, "Thus you will know them by their fruits." Ralph Waldo Emerson put it more sarcastically when he said, "What you do speaks so loud that I can't hear what you say." I think that would make a great t-shirt. The message is that our actions, it's our actions that count, and it can be read in the sacred texts of all the world's great religions. Jesus didn't just preach the faith, he lived his faith. His ministry was one of action. The Jewish prophets didn't rail against false beliefs primarily, but rather injustice. It was what people were doing, and not what they were thinking or what they professed to believe that mattered. At least four of the five pillars of Islam are ones of action. Prayer, five times a day. Giving of alms. The Hajj, the ritual pilgrimage to Mecca. And fasting on Ramadan. Only the first pillar is one of belief. One God and Muhammad his prophet. Buddhism teaches an eightfold way. Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. All related to how we live our lives. The Hindu faith tradition makes no distinction between the secular and the religious. Hinduism is literally a way of life. As a UU, your faith is your business. But you must be aware that what you believe will shape your life and your experience of this life. And so it seems it would be worthwhile for each of us to explore and to be able to articulate our personal faith and to be prepared to acknowledge the consequences of that faith. So we make the transition from hope, the human universal, to faith as a human universal. Now let's look at the proposition that where there is faith, miracles happen. I'd like to introduce the idea of miracles with a reading that I've used many times in memorial services and at funerals. I've unfortunately lost the original source of this reading. I was trying to Google it last night and didn't have enough time to find it. But I use it in funerals because so often we are focused, naturally enough, on death at the time of a funeral or memorial service. But the reading reminds us that death isn't a mystery. Death is inevitable. It's life that's the mystery. It's life that's the miracle. Life is a miracle, that a fragment of the materials of the earth should grow into human beauty, feel love and joy and sorrow, become a temple of ideas and dreams, send thought messages out through the reaches of space and time, mold meaning and patterns of beauty into the lives of others, and gather the threads of friendship, devotion, admiration, and loyalty from the hundreds of hearts to weave for itself a garment of happiness. This is the marvelous mystery, the supreme poetic achievement of time and nature. So if you balk at the use of the word miracle to explain the mystery of life, I can understand that. Life appears to be a matter of chemistry and physics, and it's currently mysterious, but will likely ultimately yield to human scientific explanation. At the moment, we don't have a good scientific explanation for life, or the beginning of life. We may someday, in the not-too-distant future, be able to explain how life emerges from non-life. But the miracle that follows faith in my triad of hope, faith, and miracle is another level above that. It's the miracle of free will. At present, we have no idea how a collection of atomic particles obeying the laws of cause and effect, even the quantum laws, and here I'm speaking of the human brain, this collection of atomic particles. How that can give rise to free will, the ability to choose, the ability to act upon a faith system. You don't have to take my word for that. I can tell you now that the first Sunday in March, Dr. Sultan Darvish will be the guest speaker here at this service. I'm really looking forward to it. He is Muslim. He's a neurologist with a PhD in molecular biology. His expertise is in the study of Alzheimer's disease. And I think if we ask him, Dr. Darvish will confirm that the emergence of free will in the human brain is something we have no idea how to begin to explain. For most religions, the origin of free will is not a problem. Free will is the gift of God. And reconciliation is primarily a matter of reconciling ourselves to our God. But for most Unitarian Universalists, reconciliation is something that happens at the human level. We must reconcile our actions with our faith in order to give meaning to our lives. We must reconcile ourselves to all other human beings who have the same worth and dignity that we claim for ourselves. And so for Unitarian Universalists, hope leads to faith, and faith leads to action in the world. As the Reverend Gardo said in the opening words, when I change, the world changes. When I exercise my free will, the world changes. And that's a miracle. As I conclude the sermon, let's return to the first principles of Unitarian Universalism. A belief, a faith, in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. How does that faith manifest itself in the lives of Unitarian Universalists? This morning I'm asking you to consider that a faith in the inherent worth and dignity of every person calls us to respond openly to every person we encounter. It goes beyond that, in that we're called to seek out those who are suffering injustice and to reconcile with them. That's admittedly a very high standard. And I remind you of the obvious fact that we often fall short of our religious aspirations. It was Henry Nouwen, the Dutch Catholic priest, professor and writer and theologian, who put it this way. True hospitality is marked by an open response to the dignity of each and every person, receiving the stranger on his own terms. But such hospitality can be offered only by those who have found the center of their lives in their own hearts. Whether you're comfortable with the word faith or not, I suggest to you this morning that the central role of this congregation, this body of people who constitute this church, is to help you to clarify and strengthen your faith, a Unitarian Universalist faith that calls you into reconciliation with all humankind. May it be so.